Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through Delta Airlines and Delta Connection partner ExpressJet, with direct flights from Tallahassee to Atlanta connecting to over 315 destinations worldwide. Fares and information available online at delta.com. And from Bryant Miller Olive, a law firm practicing government law, consulting and litigation, and public finance, serving Florida for over 40 years. Bryant Miller Olive, online at bmolaw.com. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The Florida Senate wants to steer more money into the idea of a standalone FSU engineering school, but the Florida House is less than enthusiastic.
The Board of Governors has a very serious role to play in the discussion about FAMU and FSU and the engineering school.
Also tonight, a proposal aimed at overhauling the Florida retirement system passed the House today, but the newly merged pension bill still faces a firestorm of opposition.
When you have something controversial, it will likely come to the floor through loopholes and without fully vetting the process. That is what's happening here today.
We'll also talk about the children of undocumented immigrants being cleared to become lawyers, and we'll attend an international climate change meeting that has a scary forecast for the Sunshine State. It's the end of the next to last scheduled week in the 2014 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. As the Florida House and Senate try to come up with a $75 billion spending plan for the state, one of the biggest issues lawmakers will have to decide is the fate of the joint Florida A&M, Florida State University Engineering School. Lynn Hatter reports that issue could be decided by the top lawmakers in both chambers.
St. Augustine Republican Senator John Thrasher's plan to split the FAMU-FSU College of Engineering steers $13 million to Florida State to start up its own engineering program. The dollars account for less than 1% of state spending, but it's become a major policy issue in the legislature that could ultimately be decided by Senate President Don Gates and House Speaker Will Weatherford. Weatherford says both schools have strong cases for and against a split, but he's lukewarm to the idea of the legislature doing it, saying he believes the state university governing board deserves a chance to weigh in.
Whether it's a conversation driven by the Board of Governors or the legislature, that FAMU is unharmed and that Florida State is unharmed, and that there's a way to do this that is amicable, a way that both universities can flourish, and a way that both universities can provide high-quality engineering degrees for their students.
The key word here is amicable, and that feeling was not around 2 years ago when state lawmakers approved the creation of a 12th public state university by spinning off the University of South Florida's polytechnic programs. Florida Polytechnic University recently hired its first president and is now accepting applications for its first class. Noted USF political scientist Susan McManus recalls the split created bitter feelings at the university.
More than that, there was a huge backlash in the Tampa Bay area that, it was, again, a waste of time and didn't make a lot of sense logically when, you know, there was fights for money.
The debate on whether to divide the long-established FAMU-FSU College of Engineering is becoming increasingly bitter. In recent years, the partnership has been an unhappy union, with each side considering a divide at one time or another. This time around, it's Florida State that wants the divorce. The discussion on the dissolution is tinged with racial overtones rooted in both universities' histories, says Tallahassee activist Bill Lohman. He points to one of the most painful episodes in FAMU's 125-year history, when the legislature dissolved FAMU's law school in the 1960s and created one at Florida State at the same time.
There is a very loud silence when you try to get people to talk about why black institutions are not competitive.
Florida A&M University is one of the state's oldest institutions. It's also an historically black institution that for the past decade has struggled both academically and institutionally. Accreditation, probation, presidential turnover, and financial woes have plagued the school and tarnished its reputation. FAMU is still recovering from the more recent fallout of the hazing death of one of its famed Marching 100 band drum majors. Lohman says it's very much a part of the question of whether HBCUs are still viable.
Absolutely. I would say that FAMU, with all of the fabulous success that they have up to this point, has not even begun to explore half of what its potential is.
Others would say FAMU's best days are behind it. These are the touchy questions that have singed the debate around the FAMU-FSU College of Engineering. Perception, whether justified or not, is the reality for many people. And USF political scientist McManus says regardless of the intentions behind splitting the school, race will be a part of what the public sees. She says it's exactly the kind of issue that Governor Rick Scott, who is running for re-election this year, may not want to be saddled with.
In midterm elections, when minority vote is often lower than in a presidential election year, in a way, this is, you know, giving the Democratic candidate a way to turn out a very key part of any Democratic candidate's base, which is the African-American vote.
Senate President Don Gates has remained largely silent on the FAMU College of Engineering division, but his chief budget negotiator, Stewart Republican Senator Joe Negron, has not, saying he'd like to steer even more money to help jumpstart a separate Florida State University engineering school. McManus says in order to avoid hurt feelings and bitterness, any decision to split the school has got to be mutual.
There has to be a feeling from both FAMU and FSU that they're both getting the best deal for their school and that it's fair.
Neither FAMU nor FSU requested the divorce, but FSU officials have embraced the possibility, outlining ideas for new engineering programs in areas like aerospace and biomedical research. FAMU officials have put a $100 million price tag on the split, what it estimates it would need to continue operations at the engineering school's current off-campus location. If the deal goes through, FAMU supporters have threatened to file lawsuits using the Supreme Court's ruling in Brown versus Board of Education. FAMU would allege the division separating the schools is far from a picture of equality. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
The Florida House passed a bill today that merges two pension reform plans, one dealing with local pensions, the other dealing with the state's pension system. But as Sasha Cordner reports, it's unclear what will happen in the other chamber now that the combined bill is still two separate proposals in the Senate.
Bradenton Republican Representative Jim Boyd is one of the sponsors of the merged House proposal. He contributed the part of the proposal that deals with overhauling the Florida retirement system.
This bill is a compromise approach that encourages employees to enter the plan most effective to suit their career goals. Protecting them, protecting their choice, protecting opportunities and retirement benefits for them while saving the taxpayers a projected $28 billion over the next 30 years.
The pension reform bill is split into two efforts. One led by Republican Matt Caldwell is a fix to a local pension issue that affects police and firefighters who are part of that troubled system. It's an issue that's taken years to come to a compromise and has widespread support among both Democrats and Republicans. The other, led by Boyd, is more controversial and affects state government workers as well as teachers, police, and firefighters under the state's retirement system. That proposal eliminates the traditional pension plan for elected officers and senior management officials. It also changes the default retirement option for new employees hired after July 1st of next year. Those who haven't chosen a plan within 8 months of starting their job will now default into the 401k-style investment plan instead of the pension plan. And it lengthens the amount of time it takes for someone in the pension plan to receive their benefits from 8 to 10 years. Lake Mary Democratic Representative Mike Cleland is opposed to those changes to the FRS. He adds he's tired of lawmakers whittling away at the pension system each year, especially since it's one of the most financially sound systems in the country.
Isn't it enough that we forced state and county employees to contribute 3% just a few years ago? Isn't it enough that our teachers are becoming increasingly frustrated with unfair evaluation and testing models? Isn't it enough that our firefighters and police officers risk their lives every day they don their uniforms? So when will enough be enough? I say right now.
Others, like Boca Raton Democrat Irv Salzberg, question the motive behind merging the two pension reform efforts.
Here we go again. It's another scheme to stiff our public servants' pension plan. It started off as a good bill for the firefighters and police officers. Then at the last minute, someone had to sneak in the bad provisions and combine bills.
But House Speaker Will Weatherford, who's made this a priority, doesn't see it that way. He says both issues belong together.
Local pension reform is needed in the state of Florida, but so is state FRS reform. Our reforms are moderate. They are, I think, cautious. I think they're respectful of the people who are currently in the system, and they're protective of the long-term stability of the state. And I think if the members of the Senate and the House want a local pension bill to pass, they should want a state FRS pension bill to pass because they're probably tied together.
Asked recently if the two proposals will meet in this chamber, Senate President Don Gates replied,
"You better check with the bill sponsor."
And we did. Trilby Republican Senator Wilton Simpson says while he doesn't like the idea of merging them, he'd be, quote, okay with it as long as there's no major changes.
If something comes from the House that looks like this bill, I'm not opposed to that at all. We'll take the House bill and we'll always consider them. But if they're substantially different from what we just presented, then I would not be I would not be for that bill.
As for Margate Democrat Jeremy Ring, one of the sponsors of the bipartisan bill to fix the local pensions in the Senate, he hopes that merger doesn't happen in remarks he made earlier this week.
What I don't want to see is legitimate pension that everyone agrees is a problem, reform needed. I don't want to see that compromise this year, because it's taken us 4 years to get an agreement on that, and we finally got that. And the House, unfortunately, put the two bills together.
Ring says he expects his standalone bill has the votes to pass unanimously in his chamber. His local pension fix got teed up for a vote Friday, which is expected to happen in the last week of session. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a Senate vote for undocumented immigrants to practice law has House Speaker Will Weatherford optimistic about another of his priority bills.
I think with regard to the tuition issue that they have still yet to vote on, I think it bodes well for that bill.
Lawmakers are working to ensure community association managers don't have to hand their work over to legal professionals.
If that, in fact, goes forward, and all these things that these CAMs have been doing over the last 40 years, they can no longer do, and only attorneys can do these things, the prices will go through the roof.
And an international gathering in Tampa sounds the alarm about the growing impact of fossil fuels on the planet.
Human activities have influenced the climate of this planet in a very short period of time and in a very intensive way.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving. Putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too, on the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust. Empowerment. Education. Employment.
Non-citizens brought to Florida illegally as children could get the chance to practice law under a measure the Senate passed today. As Jessica Palumbo reports, a recent Florida Supreme Court opinion urged the legislature to allow leeway for undocumented immigrants applying to the Florida bar.
Much of the Senate debate centered on one man, 27-year-old Jose Godinez Semperio. He's an undocumented immigrant whose parents brought him from Mexico when he was a child. Since then, he graduated from Florida State University Law School and passed the Florida Bar Exam and Character Background Check. But in March, the state Supreme Court ruled he couldn't legally have a law license. After the ruling, Godinez Semperio says he wants to better serve his low-income clients at Gulf Coast Legal Services in Clearwater.
I'm not able to give them legal advice because I'm not an attorney, but if I were, I would be able to help them navigate the legal system.
Future Chief Justice and Cuban-American immigrant Jorge Labarga wrote a separate opinion in the case, urging the legislature to act. This week, with days left in the lawmaking session, Orlando Democrat Darren Soto and Altamont Springs Republican David Simmons amended a broadly supported family law bill to make the change Labarga had hinted at. The bill, now heading back to the House, would allow the Supreme Court discretion in giving law licenses to non-citizens who'd lived in Florida for more than 10 years. As he introduced his amendment, Simmons seemed to anticipate pushback.
Because it's going to be a difficult debate. Because there are good points on both sides. But on this one, I believe that you cannot penalize this young man for the perceived sins of the parents.
Sins of the parents was a common theme among supportive debaters, but Fleming Island Republican Rob Bradley said he'd like to see a requirement added for the bar applicant to also apply for U.S. citizenship.
It keeps occurring to me, at some point the boy becomes a man and becomes responsible for his, or the daughter becomes a woman, and they become responsible for their actions.
But Clearwater Republican Jack Lutvalo replied he'd looked into immigration law, and many cases the first step towards citizenship would be to require the person to return to their country of origin and wait up to a decade. The debate then turned personal, with several Latin American senators sharing their family's stories. Hialeah Republican Rene Garcia says his brother Carlos was brought illegally to Florida at age 3 and went on to fight for the U.S. in Iraq.
How dare we say it's okay for them to die for this country, but yet it's not okay for them to have a professional license in this state.
But Lakeland Republican Kelly Stargell says the law doesn't just apply to upstanding young people. She says people with bad intentions might plan for years to get a law license and use it against Americans.
We have terrorists from other countries who could come over here in a negative way and try to become legal officers of the court of this country as an attorney.
The bill passed the Senate Friday on a vote of 25-12 and heads back to the House. Speaker Will Weatherford told reporters he supports the bill as amended.
I think there's a compelling argument to be made for that young man. I have had a chance to meet with him.
And Weatherford says the Senate vote bodes well for one of his priority bills up soon. That one grants in-state college tuition to undocumented students. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Should community association managers be able to fill out standard forms and make binding agreements without the oversight of lawyers? Regan McCarthy reports lawmakers in the Florida House work to answer that question today.
About 10 million of the state's citizens are living in some type of community association. That's according to Naples Republican Representative Kathleen Pasadomo. Right now, the managers of those community associations, or CAMs, are fulfilling duties like drafting meeting notices and assessing certain fees. But some have raised concerns that those managers are practicing law without a license. And Riverview Republican Representative Ross Spano says he's got a bill to address that by spelling out what jobs association managers can perform.
The list of items that are included in the bill are actually things that CAMs have been doing for a very long time. 30 or 40 years, actually.
And Pasadomo says in her professional experience, she doesn't see any reason the association managers wouldn't be able to handle those tasks.
We're not asking them to represent clients in legal matters. We're giving them the right to fill out forms. As I said in judiciary, I went to law school not to fill out forms, but to practice law. It's great to let somebody else fill out the form.
But Hollywood Democratic Representative Elaine Schwartz says she's heard the Florida Bar doesn't support the measure and worries someone without a law degree won't be able to best serve the state's citizens.
I'm not saying they're evil. I'm not saying they're trying to be money grubbing or anything, which might be true. I don't know. But I am saying that they may not be giving good legal advice to their clients. And this should not happen.
But Tampa Republican Representative Dana Young argues the bar could be opposed to the measure for another reason. She asked Spano about that during a questioning period on the bill Thursday.
Do you think that the Florida Bar might not like your bill because it would take some business away from their members?
And Spano says that could be the case. And he points out the measure is really intended to help Floridians.
This whole bill arose out of a desire to make sure that the services provided that affect the homeowners are provided in the cheapest possible way. And that if community association management companies can continue to provide these services that they've been providing for many, many years, okay, then the result is going to be that those prices and fees will stay probably the same as they are right now.
Spano says if lawyers were to take over the duties instead of the community associations, he thinks they'd likely end up charging citizens significantly more for the same services. And he says passing the bill ensures the courts won't be able to charge association managers for practicing law without a license or stop community associations from performing the tasks he says they've been doing for nearly 40 years. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
The Florida Senate today easily passed a measure that could ban certain abortions that are currently legal in the state and sent the measure on to Governor Rick Scott for his signature. Senators voted mostly along party lines for the measure 2 weeks after the House passed identical legislation by a nearly 2-to-1 vote. The measure defines viability as the stage of fetal development when the life of a fetus is sustainable outside the womb via standard medical procedures. It would require physicians to conduct exams before performing abortions to determine if fetuses are viable. If so, abortions generally would not be allowed. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. A full agenda faces lawmakers on Monday, and Ronald J. Eben has this preview.
Monday, April 28th, begins the final week of the 2014 legislative session, with the budget to be on legislators' desk by Tuesday for an on-time adjournment Friday, May 2nd. The Senate goes into session at 10 o'clock on Monday to take final action on many bills, including one that calls for penalties for hacking into computers, accessing data, or introducing a contaminant that modifies or destroys data and programs. There's a bill that revises child restraint requirements for children, a measure involving traveling across county lines to commit a felony, the low THC marijuana medical bill for specified patients for epilepsy relief for pediatric patients is on the agenda. There's the professional sports facilities bill that provides for a revision of the distribution of monies for construction of sports facilities around the state. Florida Teachers Classroom Supply Assistance Program is up for a vote. It revises procedures for distributing program funds to classroom teachers who often end up spending their own money for classroom supplies. The Florida House is scheduled to convene at 9 on Monday morning, but the agenda is not available. There will be a National Day of Prayer rally to be held in the Capitol Courtyard. It starts at 11:30. Those are some of the goings-on at the Capitol Monday, April 28th. I'm Ronald J. Eben.
Florida pediatricians say they're worried about what will happen to the young patients of Children's Medical Services as it transitions to managed care this summer. 3 years ago, the legislature passed a law overhauling Medicaid, and now Children's Medical Services, which cares for special needs kids, will transition to managed care by August 1st. Justin Senior, Deputy Secretary for Medicaid at the Agency for Healthcare Administration, says the transition is going well and that kids enrolled in Children's Medical Services can stay there. But Louis St. Petrie, vice president of the Florida Pediatric Society, says he's been getting calls from worried parents. He points to families who choose a Medicaid HMO for their kids, thinking they were doing the right thing and were taken out of the computer system for Children's Medical Services. Finally tonight, the subject of climate change hasn't really come up during this year's meeting of lawmakers in Tallahassee. With the exception of the possibility of gas and oil exploration in Collier County, the legislature has been mostly silent when it comes to the impact of fossil fuels on the larger environment. However, the situation was very different in Tampa this week. There, as Sean Canan from member station WMNF reports, the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change met, and that group's chair sounded an ominous warning.
Rajendra Pachauri told 150 students and community members at the University of South Florida's Patel Center for Global Sustainability that in the coming decades, drastic reductions in carbon emissions are needed.
In order to limit temperature increase to 2 degrees Celsius or below, you would have to enter a zone of negative emissions before the end of this century. Now, it can be done, but it'll take a lot of hard work. It'll take an enormous global effort to bring this about.
In addition to zero-emission energy sources like solar and wind, some of the options Pachauri suggests are controversial.
And nuclear energy, biomass, fossil energy with CCS, carbon capture and storage, and bioenergy and CCS by the year 2050 are the options that are available to us.
Pachauri admits carbon capture and storage is not an immediate option. The theory behind CCS is to gather the carbon dioxide gas emitted from burning things like natural gas or biomass and storing it long term, for example, under the ground. But many environmentalists consider that risky. All this effort to control climate change is because of the devastating effects that are happening and are expected to get worse in the future, including in Florida, One audience member, Karen Guerin, drove from Gainesville to learn more.
We're probably going to lose the Everglades. It's going to also impact our water resources, which are already hard hit.
Pachauri agrees that the science his team has reviewed makes it clear that ocean levels are rising.
In fact, between the beginning of the last century and 2010, there's been a sea level increase of 19 centimeters. That's close to a foot. And you can imagine there are parts of the world which are low-lying coastal areas, they're small island states, and some of them are barely a meter above sea level.
Pachauri accepted the Nobel Peace Prize in 2007 on behalf of the IPCC, an award shared that year with former Vice President Al Gore. It recently released the latest scientific consensus on climate change.
And since the 50s, many of the observed changes are unprecedented over decades to millennia. So what is really significant is the fact that human activities have influenced the climate of this planet in a very short period of time and in a very intensive way.
Those changes could cause massive storms and deadly heat waves.
The length, frequency, and or intensity of warm spells or heat waves will increase over most land areas, so much so that those heat waves, which currently take place once in 20 years in some parts of the world, will occur once in 2 years. And similarly, heavy precipitation events are on the increase both in frequency and intensity. And this will continue unless we bring about mitigation of greenhouse gases.
Pachauri says the cost to control climate change is reasonable, especially as a percent of the global gross domestic product.
In 2050, it will be 3.4%, and in 2100, 4.8%.
Despite repeated failures in the past, Pachauri is optimistic.
This is where I believe that a global agreement, which is anticipated in Paris at the end of next year, could be a very useful trigger in bringing about change. However, I think what you really need is action across the globe, at the local level, at the national level, at the subnational level. And I think if all of that were to happen, perhaps the agreement that one expects in Paris would just strengthen the resolve.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sean Canaan in Tampa.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again each weeknight during the 2014 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through Delta Airlines and Delta Connection partner ExpressJet, with direct flights from Tallahassee to Atlanta connecting to over 315 destinations worldwide. Fares and information available online at delta.com. And from Bryant Miller Olive, a law firm practicing government law, consulting and litigation, and public finance, serving Florida for over 40 years. Bryant Miller Olive, online at bmolaw.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.